And now, the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Tolsma, Adam Bennett, and Mike Arnold.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast. My name is Mike Tolsma. I'm joined tonight for this version of the Cleveland Podcast with Adam Bennett. And tonight, we're going to mix it up a little bit at Hard Foul Sports Cleveland and focus solely on the Browns. This is the best time of year. So you got football, you got basketball in full swing now, just about. The World Series just wrapped up. So, I mean, it's a good time for sports, so we got to do more than one show. So we are doing the Browns review podcast tonight with Adam, and then we will pick it up again later in the week with a little Cavs-only podcast for the basketball junkies out there. And we're just going to keep this thing rolling. So, Adam, what's going on, man?
Oh, I'm depressed, Mike. After yesterday, and I'm watching the Cavs as we record this, and they're down, I think, 12 now to Philadelphia. Although I'm not concerned about that.
Yeah. Very good Sixers team, you know.
It's okay. We're just toying with them. I'm all right with that. I'm much more depressed about yesterday's Browns game, for sure.
Well, let's talk about it. You know, talk it out. Talk your feelings out. So, pretty much, you know, this was the classic story of a team coming out of the gates really, really hot, and you just could kind of see the wheels falling off slowly but surely. And, I mean, you're talking about the Browns being up 20-7 at one point, pretty late into the first half, and, you know, McCown looked good, and all of a sudden it's just like, well, something went wrong at some point, and I guess it starts with the conservative play calling right away in the first half, let alone getting into the second half. I mean, I just want to know, Adam, you know, you obviously, you know, saw the whole game, and what did you think as you had to be able to feel it, right? Like, you could just feel that this was going to go poorly.
Yeah, you know, I wrote today for the website at hardfoulsports.com. I thought the moment the game turned is, like you said, we're up 20-7. You know, we get a turnover. Granted, it is deep in our own territory, but we have a minute and 20 seconds left to go in the half, and we had really moved the ball up and down the field really well throughout the entire half. I think we only punted once, and that was on our first drive before that. So, you know, their defense can't stop us at that point. For some crazy reason, we're scoring at will. And we're 2-5. We have nothing to lose. We're 2-5. And we're beating a much, much better team than us. And instead of try to add more to the lead, in addition to us getting the ball at the half to start the second half of play, you know, Mike Pettine decides that he's going to run the ball up the middle three times, force Arizona to burn their timeouts. We punt it back to the Cardinals. They march down the field very quickly, and they kick a field goal to make it 20-10. So, you know, best case scenario there, if you score on that drive, it's either 27-7 or it's 23-7, and you're getting the ball. Instead, we go, it's 20-10 because they score. We get the ball to start the second half. We go 3-and-out. They march right down, score a touchdown, and it's 20-17. And it just goes back to, if you've listened to the podcast before, or if anybody's read what I've wrote before, and this goes back to like the first week of the year, I think we have a play not to lose mentality. And we've had it here since 1999, regardless of who's been coaching. It's everybody's so scared that, you know, that we're going to do terrible things on our way to winning that they forget how to win. And they just try really hard to play not to lose. And Mike Pettine is no different. In fact, he's one of the worst coaches that we've had in that regard since 99. And I thought that was the turning point of the game. I thought Bruce Arians thoroughly, thoroughly out-coached Pettine, especially in the second half. I mean, you look at the adjustments they made at halftime compared to what we did, which is absolutely nothing. It's even more depressing. And if I had any doubt going into the game, which I didn't have much, but if I had any doubt that we didn't have the right coaching staff in place, I now know that this is not the way to go for us long term. I knew it with our front office. I knew it with our personnel people. But in terms of coaching, we don't have the right coaches here to have success in the long term. So, well, that makes me depressed, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, well, let me ask you about the play calling. you know, late in that first half. And the funniest thing to me is you're trying to run the ball three straight times, and whether you're just trying to kill clock or not, this isn't like it's, you know, I don't know, you know, 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. There's a lot of football left, and let's just remind you folks listening, Josh McCown was the leading rusher yesterday. Okay, 5 carries for 18 yards.
Ugh.
And then Crowell had 10 for 14. And a guy that I've been very high on for the last few weeks is Duke Johnson. He carried the ball one time out of the backfield. Now, say what you want about him maybe not being a true runner. Fine, but get him the ball. You know, he had 2 catches for, I think, 67, 68 yards, and he ran the ball one time. And his day's over. I guess, you know, when you have 10 carries for 14 yards like Crowell did, this isn't a situation where, you know, they just find out in the third quarter the running game's not working. He only carried the ball 10 times, and when he did, he wasn't very successful. Okay, so that's where I'm kind of a little confused as to why aren't you mixing up your play calling at all? Why aren't you, you know, finding different ways to get the ball into your playmaker's hands? Not to mention the fact of this, Crowell, 8 yards was his longest run of the day. He had 14 total. So we're talking 9 carries for 6 yards after that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And the worst part, and to me, what Duke Johnson made a phenomenal catch that went for like 40 yards. They spread him out into the slot as a wide receiver. They hit him on a third down, and, you know, down the field he went in one-on-one coverage. He beat a linebacker, and he almost scored a touchdown. After that play, I don't think I saw him on the field. Maybe once, maybe. And you know, the way that the Cardinals were playing defense, they were sending everybody, they're blitzing, they're trying to get to McCown, they're trying to disrupt McCown, which they didn't do in the first half. That is prime offensive opportunity for Johnson on screens and bubble screens and to split him wide and to take linebackers out of the box and to force them to try to make sure that, that you know, they keep an eye on him and take a player away from Josh McCown and going after the quarterback and pinning their ears back. And I mean, that was the perfect game for Duke Johnson. And they sat him on the bench, and they played Robert Turbin, who Robert Turbin sucks. He sucks. He fumbled the ball twice. He's a downhill, I'll get you 3 yards type of runner. He doesn't explode and hit the hole at all. He has as much playmaking ability as Duke Johnson does in his pinky finger, and we're playing Robert Turbin. I mean, it makes no sense at all. And you know, the problems with run blocking continue, especially between the tackles and with our guards. For as good as everybody wants to say Joel Bitonio is, he hasn't blocked well at all on the line. And you know, either John Greco or Cam Irving, they've struggled. You know, Irving gets a little bit of playing time every now and then. And, you know, Alex Mack has been okay. Joe Thomas and at left tackle has been fine. And we'll talk about potentially trading them, too, on this podcast, which was just an outlandish rumor. So, you know, you've got all this money invested in the offensive line. You've got all this money invested on your defense. And nothing is coming out of it. Nothing. The offensive line has been a joke. All right? It's not even been close to being good consistently. The defense has been a bigger joke, and that's Mike Pettine's bread and butter. He's got a lot of money invested on that side of the ball, and that's the one thing, Mike, and I know I'm going off on a tangent, but I've been thinking about this for a while. There is a serious rift between Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer, and you know whether or not you want to believe it, the actions speak louder than words do. You know, Pettine refuses to play any of Farmer's guys. You know, I think Farmer at this point clearly would like to see Johnny Manziel or, you know, like any of his first-round picks in the game, and Pettine won't do it. Pettine's very stubborn in that regard. But when you're a coach, okay, you have to play to the strengths of your roster. And Mike Pettine signed off on every defensive addition that Ray Farmer made. He signed off on every one. And, you know, he's on the record in public saying, oh, I like this guy, and I like that guy, and I'm glad we got him, and I'm glad we got him. And now we're 32nd in total defense, and we have the highest paid defense in the league. So, you know, Pettine can blame Farmer for not getting him enough playmakers, and there are people who will argue, well, Mike Pettine's doing the best that he can with a roster that's not very good. And I tend to agree with the roster not being very good part. But I don't see one area of this team, Mike, not one area that's improved significantly under Pettine. And that's a big problem, especially on defense. You have the same personnel coming back, and they've gotten worse. That's coaching. That's 100% coaching, and you cannot blame that on the general manager.
I look at it a lot like, take what's going on in Miami. All right, so Joe Philbin is a very laid-back, not laid-back in terms of everyone loves him, but he's just very quiet, keeps to himself. He almost seems like he was a pushover, and the players just didn't give a damn.
Yep.
And then Dan Campbell walks in the door with no head coaching experience, and the team, they're playing like world beaters. Now take away the Patriots game because everybody's going to lose to them. So Dan Campbell, you know, he walks in the door, and the whole room changes. It's just, I see the same thing with Mike Pettine. Okay, so Pettine, there's no interest there. And the only guy that really is showing any interest is Josh McCown. He's played pretty well. I'll give him that. Now, his record doesn't exactly say that, but he's played well. He had another 3-touchdown game, you know, yesterday, and it's tough. I mean, the Browns are in a very, very difficult spot because they've spent a lot of money. They have a 37-year-old quarterback starting games for them, and they don't really have an identity right now. They're definitely not a team that could run the ball. They can't run the football, I'll tell you that much. And they have very limited playmaking ability on the outside. Gary Barnage has been a really, really nice player at the tight end spot, but I just don't know what you got on that side of the ball. You know, where's the money? It's in the offensive line. How's the offensive line playing? Pretty terrible. And the defense, you know, they're tough. They're tough to read.
Worst in the NFL.
You know, their defense is the worst in the NFL, and there's a lot of money, as you mentioned, in the defense. So I look at the Browns as a team that just doesn't have any identity. And what I'm fearful of is, you know, if they go, you know, what are they, 2-6 right now, and they finish the year on another 4-12 or 5-11 campaign, what are you looking at come draft time? You know, what direction are you going in? You got all these question marks. Are they going to believe in Manziel? You know, obviously Josh McCown's a stopgap right now, but the question will remain, you know, what is going to happen with all these different positions that are kind of flux, you know? The quarterback position is obviously the most important in football. You have to start there. And the running back position, I mean, listen, if Duke Johnson's not going to be an every-down back, fine. I don't think he necessarily can be. But guess what? Isaiah Crowell is not very good. You need to find something there. And running back's it's one of those positions, you know, where you can find a guy and he can be successful. I don't think Robert Turbin or Isaiah Crowell are. You know, wide receiver, again, the cabinet's kind of bare there. I mean, Dwayne Bowe was supposed to be the big signing of the offseason. Need I say more? it just, you know, the offensive line it should be better, should be a lot better. And, you know, defense is tough. I mean, I talk about this a lot with the Bills. You know, it's so hard to replicate success. And the Buffalo defense, I'll use them as an example, that, you know, we in Buffalo thought that this was going to be a no-brainer, that the defense was going to carry our team, and for them alone, we would be successful. Well, the defense hasn't been very good. And with the defense not good, and the offense all banged up, that's what happened. That's how you get a 3-4 record. So Cleveland I fear for a little bit, especially come April, and it's sad that we're already sitting here talking about April, but or May now, I guess maybe it's in May. It's just, I don't know what direction you go in. If you got a top three pick, let me just finish this thought. If you have a top three pick, you have to get a quarterback. It's the most important position in football. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a total rebuild. It's a total rebuild. And the problem is you can't have Ray Farmer making that pick. You know, he's really right now 0-4 in first round draft picks. And now, once you start looking at his mid to late round picks that people in the past may have thought were going to be pretty good. Everybody raved about the Terrence West pick. He's now like the fourth string running back at Tennessee. They've already traded him away. Joel Bitonio.
I was a fan of that pick too, by the way.
Well,
I did like Terrence West.
You know what? You and a lot of people, including myself, but it didn't work out. And now Joel Bitonio. Joel Bitonio had a phenomenal rookie year, and he's regressed a little bit. And that's Farmer's, you know, shining pick. So, look, it's a total rebuild. You mentioned two things. You mentioned Dan Campbell in Miami. That's the example that I go back to. The number one job of a coach for a losing team is to affect change to the culture of that organization. You have to change the culture. You just do. And Mike Pettine clearly is not doing that. He's not inspiring great play from his players. They can't get over the hump. They constantly make ridiculous mistakes and shoot themselves in the foot. And his coaching, by the way, has been terrible. So, you know, you need a new coaching staff. And I don't want to hear about continuity, because if you keep continuity with the wrong people, that sets you back even farther than blowing it up every other year. So you don't have the right coaches. You don't have the right GM. I'll say what I said last week, and I'm very, very, you know, I'm very hopeful that this happens. You have to hire a GM first, or a pro personnel guy first, or a guy in charge of football operations first. And then you have to let that guy hire his head coach. Period. End of story. All right? And maybe you give one guy all the control. Maybe you go for a big name like John Gruden or whoever and throw a whole bunch of money at him and say, okay, here, you take everything. Fine. I don't care. As long as everybody, whether it's one guy or whether it's two guys or whether it's 10 guys, as long as they're on the same page. Because right now we've got this petty, childish argument between Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer, and which one's more stubborn, and you know, who's going to blink first, and it's hurting. The only thing that's hurting are the fans and the franchise. I mean, this team might not win another game. They might not. They maybe won. I mean, we do have San Francisco at home, so God, let's hope so. But this has been a colossal waste of now 2 years, because you hired the wrong people. And until you get the right people in there, it's not going to get better. You have a coach who's married to his scheme and refuses to adjust for his talent. And you have a GM that is on record saying, I don't really like playmakers. I mean, seriously, in the National Football League, your GM says, nah, I'm not a big fan of quarterbacks, and wide receivers don't really mean a whole lot to me. Well, you know, that's nice. So because of that, you have exactly what this roster is. And Mike, you know, you mentioned it's a total rebuild. I don't want to hear about the talent on defense anymore, because the defense for 2 years now has been pretty damn bad. And you are what you are, and right now they're bad. And until they improve, and they have between now and the end of the year, you got to blow that whole thing up. The offensive line has not been very good. Now, they have been good in the past. So, you know, I would give them another chance. But just about everything else, you need talent. And the problem is we don't have any assets for talent anymore, because we wasted those on four first-round picks in the last 2 years who are terrible. So you need a quarterback. Like you said, you need running backs. You need a receiver, one or two or three of them. Okay, you're okay at tight end. Thank God for Gary Barnidge, and nobody saw that coming. You still need help on the interior of the offensive line, and you really do need a whole new defense. But, you know, again, I'll say it. I don't care whether it's a 4-3 or a 3-4, whether you run a vertical run-and-gun offense or the West Coast, whether you're a running coach or a passing coach, all I want in this whole thing is for the Browns to hire a competent general manager or football person and have him hire the head coach. Because we've never done that since 1999, and it's no secret why this whole thing hasn't worked.
I want to kind of reflect on a few things there. The first thing is the positionally there are a lot of things that can improve, and I focus primarily on the offense, even though the defense has been pretty bad. I want to focus on the offense, because that is where there really is not a lot of X factors. And what I mean by that is there is not a lot of guys that you know can be a difference maker in a game. And the thing about Gary Barnidge, yeah, he's been great, but he's 31. You know, what is it? Is this a one-shot thing, or is he going to, you know, build off of this next year? We don't know. I tend to think he's probably going to regress to the mean a little bit.
Sure.
But, you know, of course, I mean, that you, come on, this has been, you know, flash in the pan, and who knows? But
he's a Brown.
But I'm just saying he's an aged player who never really did anything in his career, and now all of a sudden he's having this renaissance in his age 31 season.
Oh, you're right.
There's obviously something fishy about that. You know, I would hope that the Browns, I don't know if he's on a 1-year deal or not, but I would hope that they don't go and throw him, you know, 3 years at a stupid amount of money. That's useless. But anyways, you know, first things first, all right, no matter what, you have to address the quarterback position. And that's the first thing that whoever takes over football ops or the general manager job, that needs to be addressed first and foremost. They need to figure out, is Johnny Manziel the guy or not? And I say that because, well, looking ahead, this is a team that's picking in the top five, which means you got to figure out, do we need to get a quarterback? And the one thing that I can tell you from years and years of not having a damn quarterback in Buffalo is you better get it right, because we have never gotten it right. Let me just put it, I'll put it to you like this. We could have drafted Teddy Bridgewater a couple of years ago.
Us too.
You guys too. You know, we could have drafted Andy Dalton.
Yep, same with us.
Could have drafted, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, we're in the same boat. You know, we could have drafted Derek Carr,
uh-huh,
who's been very, very good, and I think will be a very good player. So those are just, you know, three guys off the top of my head, and the list goes on and on and on, that Buffalo passed on because they thought they had their guy. It's just the wrong play. You know, and Cleveland's in a tougher situation than Buffalo, for example, because Cleveland is looking at one guy that's 37 and another guy who's had some issues with, you know, drinking, partying, being immature, and he could be a guy that flames out, not in the league in 2 years. We don't know. So it's tough, you know, and that's kind of where I look at it. And you know, you got to build from the quarterback out. There's no question of that. It's the most important position in probably all sports.
Well, yeah, and so what's painful for us, Mike, is, you know, do you draft a quarterback? Yes, you have to draft a quarterback. And for the last 2 years, you know, 2 years ago we drafted a quarterback, and we still don't know what he is. We don't.
That's the problem. And that's the problem.
We have a coach that refuses to find out. He would rather play Josh McCown. When the team's clearly out of it, I mean, we're clearly done. We're not making the playoffs, and he'd still rather roll with McCown than get the young guy the experience that he needs and get the organization the answer that it needs as to whether or not he's the guy moving forward. And none of us know the answer to that question. And I think if you asked Browns fans honestly whether we're Manziel fans or not, I think all of us would say right now we'd lean toward no. But that's because we haven't seen enough out of him. So, you know,
what do you do is you fire the coach now.
Well, again, it's got to be at the end of the year, and you've got to clean house. But that's the hard part for fans is we've been down this road so many times. And we've only taken a quarterback high in the draft once, Tim Couch. And since 1999, exactly what you described with Buffalo has been Cleveland. Whether it be Kelly Holcomb or Jeff Garcia. And I should say, we did take Brady Quinn in the first round, but he's a late first round pick. We traded up to get him, okay. And Manziel, another late first round pick. But in the top five, we've only taken a quarterback once, and that was Tim Couch. And he's probably, from a talent perspective, the best quarterback that we've had since 1999. At the time, he just didn't have a team around him. So the scary part for us fans is right now, the question that we need to answer is, do you have a team around whoever that quarterback is for next year? And I think all of us going into this year were saying, yeah, you know, hey, if we had a quarterback, we'd be a playoff team. We went 7-9 last year with Brian Hoyer and, you know, a little bit of Johnny. And so you're thinking, all right, you know, listen, if you just get a capable quarterback, then you're a playoff team. And the problem is Josh McCown has been he's been a great quarterback. He's been a top five in the league quarterback. Nobody has seen that coming. But everybody else has sucked. The defense, the offensive line, the run game. You can't stop the run. It goes on and on and on and on. And so now you question right to, you know, you're right. Quarterback matters, and you got to get one in order to succeed. But now you're thinking, well, geez, we need a quarterback, and we also need everything else. So we're not talking that we're just, you know, 1 or 2 years away. We're like 5 or 6. And what coach wants to come here and put up with that? What general manager wants to embark upon that project? That is why everybody in Cleveland right now is understandably frustrated, disappointed, and quite frankly, angry. Bruce Drennan, who, if you're listening to this podcast and you're a Cleveland fan, you probably know who Bruce Drennan is. He's a legend in terms of Cleveland sports talk. He said it last night. He said, look, in his 30-some years of broadcasting in Cleveland, that this is, far and away, without a doubt, the worst time to be a Browns fan. And that is really, really saying something. That includes the move to Baltimore. And, you know, the 1-11 start in Eric Mangini's tenure. This has just been so bad. And to me, the only option is to blow it up. And that's why we're all so discouraged.
I would say that the one thing I disagree with, and I don't know if it's a philosophical thing where, you know, why if you guys need to see Johnny Manziel, which as an organization, you need to see your young player play. And if Mike Pettine's not going to do it, he's got to go now. You're 2-6, all right? And from organizationally, from professionally, of course, you need to have the mindset that we're 2-6, we're 2 games out of a playoff spot, right? Right? You can't blow it up yet. But in my head, and in most fans' heads, they're 2-6, it's over. Blow it up, and it starts at the head coach. You don't got to go and name a head coach on a full-term basis. You get an interim guy, someone on the staff that's good, that's innovative, and will put the reins in the young guy's hands, because he should. And it's tough for me to say this because McCown has played well, but McCown's not the future. He's got a year or two left, and that's what makes this, you know, such a fine line to walk on, because it's like, how do you justify benching a guy that's played pretty well? You know, how do you say, hey, yeah, we're going to sit you down? You're sitting him down solely based on the fact you got to see what the young kid's got before you're drafted in the top 5 next year. That's where you run into some problems.
I mean, but what bothers me is there's this allegiance to veteran players that are not playing well across the roster that, you know, whether it be a Dante Whitner before he got hurt. Joe Hayden, by the way, has been one of the worst corners in the NFL this year. Yep. So, you know, there's that allegiance to that. You know, from a linebacker perspective, on the defensive line, he doesn't like playing young guys unless he absolutely has to. And you've reached, like you said, you reach a point in the season where you have to. They're not going to fire him this year, that during the season. That won't happen. Because, quite frankly, there's nobody on staff that is, like you said, innovative or capable of even taking over on an interim basis. The offensive coordinator is a first-year offensive coordinator who is the quarterback's coach at Oakland and is a real young guy. And the defensive coordinator is, if you fired Pettine and hired Jim O'Neill on an interim basis, Cleveland would revolt. As bad as Pettine is, O'Neill is 50 times worse. So, you know, you just can't, they won't fire him in season. And I understand, I mean, look, if I were the owner, I'd go down to him and say, look, if you want any chance of keeping your job at the end of the year, you'll play Manziel. If not by Thursday in our game in Cincinnati, certainly the game after that. Once you hit that 7-loss point, it's time.
That's over.
Because now, I mean, you're thinking about something bigger than yourself. You're thinking about the health of the organization. And you're not worried about, well, hey, I've got to win as many games as I can this year, because you had that chance and you blew it. You blew it. But again, you know, the lack of innovation by this coaching staff, the stubborn, hard-nosed mentality that, well, I'm just going to do whatever's best for me, is really, really pissing off the fan base. Because even, you know, the old-timers that want McCown and don't want Manziel, or don't necessarily think Manziel is the answer, they understand that, look, at this point, you really got to find out. Maybe there's a small chance that he could be, and if you sit him on the bench, then you're never going to find out. And everybody understands it's about the organization moving forward at this point. And, you know, as it is right now, do I think Mike Pettine will be a part of that moving forward? No. And quite frankly, I hope not, because he's demonstrated this year that he is certainly way out of his league. Way out of his league. I mean, Bruce Arians made him look like a JV high school coach on Sunday. He really did. And, you know, the fact that he's going to survive that through the year is fine. But, you know, if he wants to help his reputation around the league, and certainly for his next job or for another chance at a head coaching job, you probably should bite the bullet and say, look, I've got to do what's best for the Browns. And I think the fans really believe that, Mike, that Mike Pettine isn't about what's best for the Browns. He's about what's best for Mike Pettine. And that's a big, big problem.
That's one of those things that's what gets you fired.
And it should. It should.
You know, and that's the bottom line is you lose your job if you're not willing to adapt to what's around you. And you know what? Listen, I think a lot of this too is, you know, figuring out what is, it's hard to say, what's right for the organization. I think we all know what's right for the organization. It's to figure out who's your quarterback of the future, who can handle, you know, playing big minutes on the offensive line, who can handle playing big minutes from the running back position. You know, there's a lot of different pieces here that I don't know if we're ever going to find out the answer to this season, because the coaching staff doesn't want to make a change. And to me, that's just that's pathetic.
Well, yeah. And look, you have now, to me, there's no doubt, no question, the front office leaked that report on Sunday that the Browns are shopping around Joe Thomas, Alex Mack, Paul Kruger, and Barkevious Mingo. And that's the front office basically saying, you know, you're already not in good graces with our fan base, and I can make it worse. Now, the problem is that hurts the front office more than anybody. You can trade an Alex Mack, because Alex Mack is going to be gone at the end of the year, and he's got a huge contract. And I don't think many fans, including myself, would mind having that off the books. You can trade a Paul Kruger, fine. I wouldn't miss Paul Kruger. He hasn't been that great anyway. Mingo, look, I would pay money to get rid of Mingo. But you cannot trade Joe Thomas. You can't. Joe Thomas is Cleveland. He's blue-collar. He's hardworking. He's never missed a snap of football in his career, and he's made the Pro Bowl every year. And you're going to trade him for what, a draft pick? Because, you know, we've been so great in the draft, let's ship him off for a first-round pick. So you cannot do that. And the interesting thing between now and tomorrow at 4 o'clock to watch is going to be if ownership allows the front office to make any trades. Because if I'm Jimmy Haslam and I'm seriously considering a new general manager next year, I'm not going to allow the current general manager to totally blow up the roster. And I've also got a problem with the head coach who won't play the young guys on the roster that we don't know about. That is a level of dysfunction. Out of all the dysfunction that we've seen since 1999, this may be the highest. And that's really, really saying something. And that absolutely 100% means long-term, these guys are not the right people for the job.
I think it shows you, too, that there is just a severe, and you mentioned this, it's a severe disconnect. And you talked about it at the top of the show. There is just such a disconnect that simply, you know what, it's borderline embarrassing to have such a battle like this. And yeah, I mean, listen, they're cleaning the house, and I think we both know it. I think the fan base knows it. I'm sure they all inside the office knows it. And you know, the trade things, you see this stuff all the time. So I wasn't overly shocked to see it. I think it's just a lot of it could have just been somebody in the front office put a leak out there. They want to get some feelers. Why not? You know, I mean, that's I don't have an issue with that, but Joe Thomas, if he got traded, I don't know what would happen, because he's one of the best in football, if not the best. And you get rid of him, and you get rid of the heart and soul of it's reminiscent kind of to the Freddie Jackson thing in Buffalo with him being released, but to an even higher standard because of how good Joe Thomas has been. It's tough. You know, and that a good point was made, you know, when we were just going over and asking for questions and everything. And, you know, one of the questions we got, and we'll talk about this as we go into our question segment, Tim Brady on Twitter, at Graham Hammer, he basically tweeted in. He said, if they're willing to trade vets for rebuilding purposes, why are they playing an injured 36-year-old who's 3-21 in his last 24 starts?
Yeah.
That's exactly it, you know?
That's why the front office leaks that, because I think that's the front office's way of telling the fans, look, we're with you. We want to see what our young talent that we drafted has in them. And so, you know, you put the coaching staff and the ownership in a precarious position because now they've got to respond to this stuff. I mean, the benefit for Ray Farmer is he doesn't have to answer to any of this. He doesn't give press conferences. So Mike Pettine has to stand up there in his press conferences and answer questions about players potentially being traded. And you know, Tim, you're absolutely right with the question. Why would you want to play the 36-year-old washed-up vet? Look, Josh McCown, they could have had Freddy from the Halloween movies come out there and chop his right arm off, and Mike Pettine would have been like, hey, you're still in the game, buddy. You're still going, no way am I putting Johnny Manziel in. You keep going. Throw with your left arm. You know, they weren't taking him out. So why play the 36-year-old veterans? Why continue to ride on your veteran, quote-unquote, leadership on defense when you're so clearly outmatched and being outplayed and the season is clearly over? That's a great question. I think that's exactly why the front office leaked what they did. And it just goes to show you again that there is a serious rift between our general manager and our head coach. And it's clear that both of them cannot survive this. It would be a tragedy if even one of them survived this. And what should happen is both of them should be fired.
Well, that's a good segue into the second question we got, and it came from Dennis Placco on Twitter. He goes, do you think firing Pettine buys Farmer a chance with his own coach? And he puts in parentheses, really not hoping so. But, you know, I think that's one of those things where, you know, Farmer didn't have the opportunity to hire his own guy. And if he really wanted to, I guess you could, you know, fire Pettine after year one. But they went 7-9. It's hard to justify that after so many years of disappointment. They finally looked like they were making a climb. What do you think? I mean, if Pettine's gone, does Farmer get a shot? Obviously you just said you hope they're both gone. But business-wise, is that even in the cards?
I don't know how you could justify keeping Ray Farmer. I mean, he's the man that paid $9 million guaranteed to Dwayne Bowe, but let Buster Screen walk for $7 million. His answer to our playmaking problem at wide receiver was Brian Hartline. You know, four first-round picks in the last 2 years, only one of them plays, and he's statistically ranked the worst at his position in the National Football League. So there's no stat or fact that could justify keeping Ray Farmer. And, you know, I don't know how you could go into the future being like, hey, we're really excited about this guy here. You know, let's give him the opportunity. He screwed up all of our picks and our personnel, and we've got all this cap room, and he refuses to spend in free agency, except when he does, he gets it totally wrong. Now let's let him hire the next head coach. I mean, how do you do that? I don't think there's any way that you can do that. But like I said, that's better than the alternative, which is having a GM and coach that hates each other. So to answer Dennis's question, I don't think that'll happen. I certainly hope it won't happen. I just hope they hire a new GM and allow him to hire his own guy.
All right, and let's have some fun with this one. This is the last question of the night. It comes from Ryan on Twitter, and he basically is asking you, rank these coaches. And this could be fun. This could turn into a little discussion. You got Mike Pettine. You got Chud. You got the famous Pat Shurmur. You got Coach Mangini. And you got Romeo Crennel. You got five coaches. I want to hear them 1 through 5. Starting at 5. And, of course, I'd love to hear who your best one out of these 5 are.
Oh, my gosh. 5 has got to be Pat Shurmur. Although Pettine's really getting close. he is getting close, so that would put Pettine at 4, and those are the easy ones. I would say Chud is 3. Chud never got a chance, but Chud was also pretty clearly in over his head, and kind of the same thing. You know, he started 4-3 and ended up 4-12, and the team never got better under his watch. There were a lot of issues, you know, off the field, so on and so forth. So I put him 3, and that's really saying something. That out of those 5, Rob Chudzinski is not last or even second to last. Number 2 would be Crennel. I mean, he did lead us to a 10-6 record, but, God, that was a fluke. And then number 1, from a coaching standpoint, I really did like Mangini. And it's just kind of the Browns' luck that at the time that they hired him as coach, the GM that they hired after they hired him, which, again, is totally ass backwards. But, you know, that's the whole George Kokinas thing, which he leaves the organization like a week after he started for reasons that a lot of us know but can't really say or don't want to say. But anyway, so then Mangini has to be the GM. And, you know, he totally screws us with his drafting. You know, he did take Mac, which was a good pick, but Mohamed Massaquoi and Brian Robiskie in the second round, and passing on all of the players, I'm not even going to go through the list of who he passed on, that set us back years. And so while he was a great coach, he was a terrible personnel man. And so, you know, I'd hire him. If you hired me a competent GM, I wouldn't mind him being coach. I really wouldn't. He had some great wins with some pretty bad talent, but he's definitely the best out of those 5. And I'd probably say the best coach from an X's and O's standpoint that we've had since 99.
All right. So that's, you know, it's funny because Eric Mangini is one of those guys that he's had a lot of opportunity in the NFL, and sometimes, you know, he just couldn't take advantage of it in New York. He was supposed to pretty much be the next up-and-coming young coach in the league in New York. Didn't really work out. But, I mean, what shocks me about this is that, you know, he's in San Francisco now. And, listen, he's only 44, 45 years old. He's been in San Francisco since 2013 after, you know, he took 3 years out of the league. He comes back. He goes to San Francisco as their tight ends coach. Now he's their D coordinator. This is a guy that was on the staff with Jim Harbaugh. And the 49ers go out and they hire Jim Tomsula over Eric Mangini. I'm like, whoa! Like Jim Tomsula looks like a used car salesman, or like a guy that sells you tires. And instead he gets hired as the head coach, and Eric Mangini, who's got some head coaching experience, is on that staff. Not to mention the fact everybody knew that San Francisco was going to be pretty bad this year. You know, they lost 100 players. They had guys that were like 25 retiring because they'd rather not play for Jim Tomsula. Like there's so much going on, and Mangini barely gets a sniff at the job. Shocks me. I don't know if that means his value in the league is just deteriorated. It doesn't help that he's the D coordinator of a depleted defense, and everyone's going to talk about the 49er defense. Like, oh, they were really good 3 years ago, and now they stink. And I'm like, well, that's because all the players are gone. But that's for another podcast, I guess.
Poor Jim Tomsula.
Well, you know, when you fart in press conferences and you have a terrible mustache.
You're totally right. I mean, you didn't say anything wrong there. It's just poor Jim Tomsula.
Yeah, poor Jim. You know, but it's, you know, it's a shame because Mangini actually was a guy I really did like.
He's a good coach. He is a good coach.
Did a nice job at ESPN or wherever he was for a little bit. And now he's back in the league as a D coordinator for a terrible defense. So with that, I have one more question for you. Cleveland Browns, all right? And, you know, we've spent this whole podcast talking about them. By the way, that as I mentioned earlier in the show, this is what we're going to be doing, you know, weekly now. We're going to have a Browns show and our own basketball Cavs show. But for you, Cleveland Browns, a little primetime action Thursday night. For the most part, the Thursday night games are brutal. We've had a couple decent ones, but they've always been pretty bad. Usually they stick the Bills and Browns together until they did the divisional thing. So, I mean, you're heading into Cincinnati. Cincy's 7-0. They're coming off a great win over Pittsburgh. I won't call it great, but it's a nice win over Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger comes back. What do you What are you thinking heading into this? It's a short week, and what do you got?
We're going to get murdered. you know, although I will say with Cincinnati, and I think I said this in our preview podcast way back when, probably our first one, Cincinnati is one of those teams we always split with, and I don't know why we do. We've actually won three of our last five against them, which makes no sense at all, but we have. So could the Browns, you know, shock the world? That would, I will say this, that would be the most Cleveland Browns thing to do, right? Just have this unbelievably god-awful season where all of us are in total shock and anger and, you know, just watching this mess. And then all of a sudden, in front, their first time on national TV, they go out and spank the Bengals. And everybody say, hey, that Mike Pettine's doing a good job in Cleveland. And that would be the most Browns thing to do. But I don't think it'll happen. We just, we're so hurt and injured and banged up. And, you know, like I said, I think Mike Pettine, if he had his way, he'd wheel Josh McCown out onto the field in a gurney and play him over Johnny Manziel. So whether or not he has like eight broken ribs or, you know, a torn shoulder, whatever it is, they'll still play him. And, you know, we'll find a way to lose the game just like we kind of always do. I really do believe we only have one more win on the schedule, and that's San Francisco at home. I think Pettine has officially lost the locker room. You know, fans are certainly apathetic, and as Bruce Strennan said, it's the worst time to be a Browns fan, maybe ever, but certainly in a long time, and that's just sad. It really is.
Yeah. So that that's a pretty much a wrap right there.
What
so,
a way to end it. Hey guys, worst time ever to be a fan. Thanks for listening.
I'll tell you what though. Let me ask you this real quick before we end the show. They're still going in and playing a Cincy team that they were in a dogfight, right? I mean they were in a tough game with Pittsburgh, and now they got a short week. And not to say that Cleveland doesn't have a short week, but I mean you never know, right? Cincy on a short week. Granted, they're at home, but if there's a letdown coming for the Bengals, which we know there is, there's a Dalton letdown on the way. I feel like this could be the week.
Oh, I'm sure. And again, it wouldn't surprise me. The question is, as a fan, do you want that to happen?
Right.
I mean,
right.
Seriously, because if the Browns win, then Mike Pettine storms into that press conference after, see, I told you, Josh McCown, and we're still going to play them. And now you've set back, playing your young guys even longer. You're 3-6. And then all of a sudden the locker room starts dragging the fans back into, hey, we can make the playoffs. We're now 2-0 in the division. We just beat one of the best teams in football. We can do this. And how many times can this fan base be dragged back in to believing? I mean, it happened to me on Sunday. I go into that game thinking we're going to absolutely get trounced. And we're up 20-7, and I'm waving the pom-poms like we're going to the Super Bowl. And then just as quickly, we're down 34-20. So that's the emotional part of this. It's not as if just like, you know, we're losing, right? It's let's drag us through the mud. Let's try to get our hopes up every single time, just so we can be let down over and over and over again. And it's just so painful for the, you know, I'm one of them, but I certainly feel for everybody that, like me, has stayed loyal, that really cares about this team, that wants more than anything for this team to do well, to see the type of dysfunction that's in the organization, starting from the owner, who's been a total and colossal joke, extending to the team president, who says, you know what, sorry that you know, we've treated you so badly in the past. As a gift to you, we're going to raise your season ticket prices and your individual ticket prices and make it more expensive for you to watch a bad product. To the general manager, who is the worst in the league. To the head coach, who's one of the worst in the league. I mean, it's just, it's so sad to have this happen. And I feel for everybody out there. It's just like repeatedly getting hit by a truck over and over again. But you know what? The good news is, Tolles, the time we started this podcast, the Cavs were down like 12 or 14 to Philadelphia. They're now up double digits. So thank God for the Cavs.
I did notice that when I was checking the score real quick here while you were talking. I'm like, oh, wow, look at them. They're winning. So, all right, Adam, anything for me?
Hey, go Bills for you. Go Bills.
Yeah. So, anyways, so make sure you check us out. Hard Foul Sports Cleveland. All of Adam's work is on hardfoulsports.com. You can find him on Twitter at HFSCleveland. Twitter count's getting up there. All right, we're getting back. We're getting back to the fake Pat days. Like to see that. So the Twitter account's growing. A lot of great fan interaction over there. And be sure to check out Hard Foul Sports at Hard Foul Sports on Twitter, at Hard Foul Sports on Facebook. A lot of great interviews on there. There's a few, you know, of course, Buffalo-based ones because the beginning of Hard Foul Sports was Buffalo-based. We got a couple guys from the local area there, but we also had a great interview with Kian Fai. He's from Bleacher Report. We talked a lot about the Bills, but we did touch on some other things around the league. So check out all the content there. Keep up with the listens. We appreciate y'all, and we like doing it with you guys. So until next time, we'll have that Cavs podcast on the way for you within the week. And enjoy the game Thursday night, Browns-Bengals. That'll be on CBS and NFL Network, Thursday Night Football. Other than that, that's all we got for you. So for my friend Adam, I'm Mike Tolsma. This was the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland podcast on hardfoulsports.com.